smoke jumpers have been on site trying to identify what structures and sites out there may require protection.
Alaska wildfires have now burned over 250,000 acres this year. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, August 9th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, fish processors announce another low price, this time for chum salmon.
It makes it extremely difficult as a commercial fisherman to make expenses and even to make a profit.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
You know that eating fruits and vegetables supports good health, but did you also know that frozen and canned produce offers the same health benefits as fresh? It's true. Whether fresh, frozen, canned, or from the land, eating fruits and veggies can lead to a long and healthy life. So when it comes to getting the fruits and veggies you need to stay healthy, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by Snap.
Wildfires in the eastern interior near the Alaska-Canada border experienced significant activity yesterday. According to the Alaska Fire Service, the area along the top of the World Highway was hot and smoky despite some light rain showers. Fire Service Information Officer Al Nash says there are three blazes burning north of the highway.
The wood fire was the first one that was discovered. It's reported at about 1,300 acres. Just to the northwest of that's another small fire. And then northeast of Chicken is the Napoleon Fire. That's probably around 900 acres.
Nash says the fires are in a limited management zone and the focus is on structure protection.
There are some residences, some cabins. There is some mining activity in the area.
Nash says the plan is to wrap up work on the small fire and focus on the two bigger blazes.
On the largest fire, the wood fire, we now have both smoke jumpers and the North Star crew out there conducting point protection efforts. With the Napoleon fire, which is a little newer, smoke jumpers have been on site trying to identify what structures and sites out there may require protection.
The fire service also received a report of a new wildfire farther north yesterday. It's burning about 25 miles west of the Alcan border, just north of the Arctic Circle in the Yukon Flats region, where a red flag warning for extreme wildfire conditions is in effect due to forecasted 80-degree high temperatures, low humidity, gusty winds, and thunderstorms. Cooler temperatures, rain showers, and heavy smoke are together moderating wildfire activity in other areas of the interior, including around Fairbanks. Alaska Division of Forestry and Fire Protection spokesperson Lily Coyle says the change in conditions enables firefighters to work directly on fire perimeters and gives managers a chance to assess the situation.
Basically allowing our operations to know what they're dealing with and to strategically and safely get resources in.
Alaska's burst of late season wildfire activity began late last month, and Coyle says some crews have been flown in from the lower 48. She says even if cool, showery weather persists, a lot of work remains to be done.
Every fire operation, we diligently try and kind of wrap up and tidy up the area, and we'll definitely have weeks of work ahead.
The number of acres burned so far this season in Alaska made another big jump following this past weekend's hot, dry, windy conditions. Over 250,000 acres have burned, up from about 1,500 just 2 weeks ago. Kodiak fishermen are disappointed by yet another setback to this year's salmon season. Trident Seafoods announced over the weekend that they will pay just 20 cents per pound for chums and will stop buying salmon altogether for most of the state starting in September. As KMXT's Brian Venois reports, it comes as fishermen have faced lower prices across the state compared to last year.
Trident announced the price drop in a letter to its fleet on Saturday. That's less than half of last year's price per pound. In the same letter, the company said it will not participate in fall salmon fishing and will only purchase salmon from Petersburg and Cordova South starting in September. Jerry Common-Kanagan has fished for Trident Seafoods for decades. She says seeing the price drop so low this year is frustrating.
It makes it extremely difficult as a commercial fisherman to make expenses and even to make a profit, which is what we're in it for, especially when the fuel prices have gone up and grocery prices have all risen. It's taking away anything that we might be able to make.
She says Trident claimed they would pay about 30 cents per pound earlier this season before lowering its base price. Kodiak fishers have also faced lower prices for Tanner crab earlier this year. A lot of the island's fleets also fishes for Bristol Bay sockeye, where processors announced significantly lower prices earlier this season compared to last year as well. But lower prices aren't the only issue. Late runs and fall fishing is usually Kodiak's bread and butter, and the island had a large pink salmon forecast. Cobin Kanagan says she usually fishes into the fall, but now her season's been cut short.
Cutting it off about the 1st of September, that's where we typically fish silvers. And having that cutoff date does impact our ability to earn more money because we could still be fishing until the 15th of September or so.
Trident said in the letter that the move is in response to Russian fishers flooding the market for salmon. A spokesperson for Trident emphasized global market conditions and had no further comment when reached by email. Greg Smith is the communications director for the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. He says ASME recently received more funding from the state legislature, and they're doing their best to move Alaskan salmon as fast as possible.
We're using that to reach out and do additional work, promotions, to increase market and demand at retail, food service, and then direct to consumer. We know there's more work to be done, and we'll do that work to stimulate the market and stimulate demand.
Cobin Kanagan says she wouldn't be surprised if her peers who fish for other processors receive similar announcements soon.
There's quite a few people that are impacted, and the reality of what happens is that when one processor puts out an announcement like that, typically other processors follow that situation.
In the meantime, she and others will just have to hope for the best out of the situation. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Venois.
The ConocoPhillips oil drilling site on the North Slope, known as the Willow Project, has drawn criticism from around the country, primarily because of the implications to the global climate from pumping more fossil fuel out of the ground, burning it for energy, and putting more greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. Now, with a legal challenge still pending in court, even the United Nations Human Rights Council wants to get involved. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin is here to tell us more. Liz, the UN Human Rights Council? Really? What's the deal with that?
Well, it's the UN Special Rapporteur on Climate Change. They've asked the judge hearing the legal challenge for permission to file a friend of the court brief in the lawsuit, which was filed by environmental groups and other groups trying to stop the Willow Project.
What's a rapporteur? Rapporteur?
Yeah, it's a funny UN word, right? Rapporteurs are independent experts who do fact-finding in countries suspected of human rights abuses. They aim to bring global condemnation to wrongdoing. In this case, they want to advise the judge on the international human rights implications of Willow, which they contend would do a lot to aggravate the climate crisis.
Okay, what does their brief say?
They say Willow, because of all the oil it would produce, would impair America's ability to fulfill its obligations to cut back on carbon emissions, and by putting so much oil on the market, also undermine other countries' abilities to meet their climate change obligations.
Interesting. So this is a friend of the court brief, an amicus brief? The judge doesn't have to accept it, right?
Yes. Amicus or amicus briefs, I've heard it both ways, are filed by people who are not parties to the case but want to weigh in with information they think the parties aren't going to present. ConocoPhillips is objecting to this one. They say the UN rapporteurs aren't really independent voices here because the lawyers representing them have ties to some of the environmental groups trying to stop Willow. I believe the federal judge, that's District Court Judge Sharon Gleason, has not yet decided whether to allow this brief. But to be honest, Casey, there are so many friend of the court briefs pending in this case that I've kind of lost track.
That many friends, huh? Who else is trying to weigh in?
The Alaska delegation, that's the U.S. senators and Congresswoman Mary Peltola, who filed in favor of developing Willow. We've got a bunch of Peltola's Democratic colleagues who want to weigh in against the project. And interestingly, Patagonia, the outdoor gear company.
Wait, what stake does Patagonia have in this? I assume they're anti-Willow, but why do they want to be involved in this court filing?
They say that as climate change causes more wildfires, more extreme weather, coastal erosion, it prevents people from recreating outdoors and buying Patagonia's gear.
Okay. Really? From buying their stuff?
Yeah. I mean, it says that they exist to get people out and enjoying the outdoors, and climate change would tend to diminish the outdoor recreation industry, of which Patagonia is a part.
Okay. Okay. So all of these different groups want to weigh in on the lawsuit. What's the message that you're seeing here?
Well, I find it interesting that opposition to Alaska oil development, specifically Arctic oil development, it used to be mostly about what it means to the surface of that place and the wildlife that use it and the people that depend on the wildlife. And we still see that a few miles to the east in the opposition to drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. But the opposition to Willow really centers on the climate impact, and that's a global issue, so we have a more global cast of characters here.
Okay, well, Liz, we have enjoyed having you as part of our cast of characters here. That was Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Casey.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Angoon prepares for a hydroelectric project 4 decades in the making.
This is really the first and potentially the only funding of this size specifically for rural areas to do renewable energy.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Invasive plants and animals threaten Alaska's waters and can spread to new locations by hitching a ride. Anyone can help stop aquatic hitchhikers by remembering to clean boots, boats, and trailer to remove plants, animals, and mud. Drain bilge, ballast, and buckets before leaving the area, and dry equipment before using it in a new body of water. Learn more at stopaquatichitchhikers.org. This message sponsored by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Troopers seized an estimated $50,000 worth of illegal drugs from a tent at the Salmon Fest Music Festival in Nanilchik last weekend. According to a charging document, Alaska state troopers were tipped off by festival security about psychedelic mushrooms being sold from a campground near the fairgrounds. Troopers located Joshua Brown of Anchorage, nicknamed Charlie Hustle. Brown was on parole for a first-degree assault and was not allowed to travel outside of Anchorage or possess controlled substances as conditions of his parole. In Brown's tent, troopers say they found meth, cocaine, psilocybin mushrooms, LSD, and hundreds of grams of an unknown substance suspected to be a synthetic drug. Troopers estimated the street value of all the drugs in Brown's tent to be around $50,000. Brown is charged with 8 total counts, 4 charges of misconduct involving a controlled substance in the 3rd degree, and 4 charges of misconduct involving a controlled substance in the 5th degree. The charges say troopers expect to bring more charges once the seized drugs are weighed and identified. The Anchorage Assembly approved city code changes last night aimed at improving bike safety and making the city more bike-friendly. North Anchorage Assembly member Daniel Volland was one of the authors of the ordinance. It adds definitions like protected bike lane and vulnerable road user to city code. Volland says that will allow for future bike-friendly infrastructure.
My overarching theme is transportation choice. So this is not about cars versus bikes or cars versus pedestrians. This is about you should be able to choose your method of navigating our city safely, get from point A to point B, get to your destination safely, however you choose to travel.
The ordinance also gets rid of fines for jaywalking and allows cyclists to treat stop signs more like yield signs and red lights like stop signs. West Anchorage Assembly member Anna Brawley says that doesn't allow cyclists to blow through red lights.
What this avoids is that, you know, for example, a bicyclist proceeds through, you know, even though there is a red light, again, no cars at this intersection, so it is safe to do so otherwise, and then they get pulled over and get a ticket for that.
Brawley and Volland pointed out that other states that instituted similar rules, like Idaho and Delaware, saw a decrease in traffic collisions involving bicycles. Initially, the ordinance would have repealed the fine for children under the age of 16 who don't wear a bike helmet. However, it was amended to keep the fine. The ordinance passed by a 9-2 vote with members Randy Sult and Scott Myers opposed. A new hydroelectric project on Admiralty Island has gotten the go-ahead 4 decades after it was approved by Congress. In late June, the U.S. Forest Service granted a special use permit for a small-scale hydro plant on Thayer Creek near the town of Angoon. The local Alaska Native Village Corporation is now going after construction funding for the project, which is expected to fully replace costly diesel power. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
The construction of a run-of-river hydro development in the Admiralty Island National Monument was authorized by ANILCA, the 1980 Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act. The project is being propelled by Kootsnawoo, Inc., Angoon's village corporation. It's unusual for a native corporation to build a public utility. John Wunro, Kootsnawoo's Director of Natural Resources, believes the right people were in the room as ANILCA was being hammered out by the presidential administration at the time.
My hunch is that the leaders from Angoon who went to D.C. and met with Jimmy Carter to kind of broker this part of the deal probably had representation from the Village Corp, and I think that's maybe how they got named.
Thayer Creek is about 3 miles from Angoon. Over the past few years, Kootsnawoo has used a $5 million grant from the Alaska Energy Authority to plan and engineer a dam, power plant, and utility tunnel back to town. Wunro says 2 major barriers remain.
One is we still have to complete the heritage work to make sure that there aren't any historic or cultural items of significance that will be disturbed in any way.
An archaeological team from the U.S. Forest Service is on site doing that work this summer. The second barrier could take more time.
And then we need funding.
Wunro says Thayer Creek Hydro is an unfunded federal project authorized by Congress but with no money to build it. Wunro says this partly explains why Angoon never moved forward with the project. There was always an expectation that the federal government would follow through with the $30 million or so needed for construction. Steadily rising fuel prices helped to change that attitude. Electricity in Angoon costs up to 8 times more than in the lower 48. The crunch motivated Kootsnawoo to take the initiative about 3 years ago to plan the project without federal support. And then came President Biden's bipartisan infrastructure bill, which includes $1 billion for energy improvements in rural or remote areas. The ERA program, for short, is tailored to build energy resilience and affordability in communities of under 10,000 people. Wunro says this is Angoon's shot to connect with funding that's 4 decades overdue.
This is really the first and potentially the only funding of this size specifically for rural areas to do renewable energy. So it's kind of got there written all over it. So we're hopeful.
If it comes to fruition, Kootsnawoo will own the Thayer Creek Hydro Project, but it will be operated by the Inside Passage Electric Cooperative, or IPEC, which currently supplies electricity to Angoon from diesel. Affordable hydropower could revolutionize life for Angoon's 500 residents. Thayer Creek's 850 kilowatts would fully replace the existing diesel plant, which would be preserved as a backup. The total savings will be 250,000 gallons of fuel annually, worth about $1 million. The project would be built upstream of a natural salmon barrier, so no fish would be harmed. If we could just stabilize the cost of power, that would be a big win for Angoon, says Wunro. But we're also hoping it ushers in an era of electric motors, electric cars, electric boats, and heat pumps. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing cargo transportation to 9 Alaska communities. NAC offers options including cargo charters to get freight where it needs to be. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. Whether this is your first try to quit or you've been down this path before, Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help you quit for good. Get help creating a plan that is right for you no matter if you smoke cigarettes, vape, use smokeless tobacco, or ICMIC. With options like calling a coach, receiving text messages, and nicotine replacement therapy with patches or gum, you can quit your way at any time of day or night. Call Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line at 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit AlaskaQuitLine.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line.
A new solar energy project in Galena promises to help the Yukon River community reduce its dependence on expensive diesel-fired power generation. Tribal officials worked with the city and school district to complete the project, and they're now considering building a bigger solar energy facility. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Work on the 50-kilowatt solar array was completed last month, and it's now being hooked up to the small grid operated by the city of Galena's electric utility. Loudoun Tribal Administrator Brooke Sanderson says if all goes well, the solar panels will begin generating power next week.
It's definitely an exciting project for the community.
Exciting because the new system will displace diesel fuel that up until now has been the only way to generate electricity in the western interior community of about 400 people. The cost of diesel has been rising steadily in recent months, and it's even more expensive because it's brought to the community by barge up the Yukon River.
This reduction in diesel fuel is hopefully going to be really huge for the city of Galena because that's a major cost they have to incur every year.
That's why Galena utility customers pay more than 72 cents per kilowatt hour, about three times what Golden Valley Electric Association members pay, and about five times what Anchorage-based Chugach Electric members pay. And even though solar panels won't produce much electricity during the winter, they'll make up for that in the spring, summer, and fall.
People always argue, oh, well, what are you going to do during the winter months?
Dave Messier is Rural Energy Coordinator for the Tanana Chiefs Conference.
And we tell them, well, the same thing that the community has been doing during the winter months for the last 50, 60 years, run diesel generators. But during the summer, at least, we've got a ton of free energy that's hitting the surface of the earth.
Messier's been helping the Loudoun Tribe get funding for the project as part of Tanana Chief's larger efforts to help rural communities reduce their use of diesel with reliable, easy-to-maintain, renewable energy systems equipped with backup battery power.
Up in Hughes, we have a system that's been running in diesels off for portions of the year for periods of up to 12 hours, and it's in its second year.
Sanderson says if the 50-kilowatt project in Galena performs well, it'll serve as a stepping stone to a larger 1.2-megawatt solar array that the tribe wants to build. And tribal officials learned last month that the Federal Department of Energy awarded a $2.25 million grant to help pay for the project, which is expected to save 95,000 gallons of diesel annually.
The smaller scale project, the idea is that it would inform some of the management decisions on the large scale project because this is new.
We're excited to see this pilot project get up and running and see how it actually goes.
Tim Kalki is General Manager of Sustainable Energy for Galena, Alaska, or SEGA, a nonprofit jointly run by the Tribe, City of Galena, and City School District.
And then as winter and next spring come about, help us really make more firm decisions for the larger project.
Kalki and others in the community established SEGA 9 years ago to find alternatives to diesel fire generators that the military handed over to the city after it closed Galena Air Force Station in 2008. He says they jointly decided to build a biomass energy plant that burns locally harvested wood to heat the former base that now houses the Galena Interior Learning Academy, or GILA, a residential vocational school. And he says the success of that project and the solar pilot project may build community support for taking the next step on a bigger solar project.
You know, really involves all of the main entities in the community between the tribe, the city, the school, SEGA, and the people. Because ultimately, the individuals who have their roots deep within the community are the folks who are going to have to keep it up and running.
Sanderson agrees and said that's another benefit the project would bring. It'll enable young people to learn about solar energy and then get good-paying jobs in the community they grew up in operating the facility. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
The 5th annual Aleutian Electrocution Music and Arts Festival brought thrilling performances and summer celebration to Unalaskans in late July. KUCB's Andy Lusk has more.
The winding gravel road down Captain's Bay passes through Westward, the heavy industry of OSI, and the new Trident plant before ending at a hippie playground that's only up for 3 nights per year. Aleutian Electrocution features live DJs, fire dancing, metal art, potluck dinners, a bouncy castle, fireworks, and bonfires that burn till dawn. The festival raised $5,000 for the Rusting Man Foundation this year. The local nonprofit is in the process of completing a memorial to Unalaskan fishermen lost at sea. Carl Mihalik is president of the foundation and started the arts festival with his wife, Marie, 5 years ago. He aims to have the memorial's concrete foundation finished by the end of this year. And stainless steel statues of Unalaska locals are also in the works.
One of them is Dusty Dickerson, the local local longliner, yep. You know, and other one is Joe Shaisnikov, which used to be many years crabber, and that's what he's holding the crab pots, mm-hmm. And he's native. And we talking about the third one is the guy from Seattle on one of those factory trawlers.
The city council is discussing where the memorial will go, but Mihalik already has a favorite spot in mind.
There was 5 proposed sites. I think they are letting the artists decide the best one, and I think the best one is right above the new small boat harbor.
Mihalik's artwork is scattered throughout Unalaska. He created the cube in front of the Norwegian Rat Saloon, and some of his work is currently on display in the Museum of the Aleutians.
I like to do stuff from the sea.
Aleutian electrocution attendees were able to get a glimpse of Mihalik's art studio, which is housed in the festival's main tent. The studio boasts years of in-progress and completed projects, including sculptures and flat-cut metal artwork, and the model for the Fisherman's Memorial. The festival is one of a kind in Unalaska and hasn't been happening for long. But Mihalik doesn't know what the future holds, and he and his team are still deciding whether or not Aleutian electrocution will continue into 2024. With the Fisherman's Memorial expected to go up next year, Mihalik wants to organize the festival at least one more time. He's thinking of linking future versions to the Burning Man regional network. The regional network helps spread events similar to the famous Nevada Gathering to locations around the world.
I'm going to Burning Man every year. And to actually be associated with the Burning Man, a really call it regional burn of Alaska, you have to invite somebody from management in Burning Man to here, and they will actually, after the Aleutian electrocution, they will say, oh, this is actually, we want to put our name on it. You know, so it might probably happen one day, I don't know.
Mihalik, however, remains adamant that no plans are set in stone. Until then, memories around the bonfires of Aleutian electrocution's past will have to do. In Unalaska, I'm Andy Lusk.
That is all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Brian Venois in Kodiak, Liz Ruskin and Wesley Early in Anchorage, Riley Borden in Kenai, Robert Woolsey in Sitka, Tim Ellis in Delta Junction, and Andy Lusk in Unalaska. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alaska Air Cargo, providing Gold Streak Express shipping for urgent deliveries throughout Alaska, with connections to more than 100 destinations in the lower 48 and Hawaii. More at alaskacargo.com.
And by
ConocoPhillips Alaska, building the next generation of Alaska's workforce through investments in education and vocational training to provide jobs right here at home. ConocoPhillips Alaska.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.